ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ Let there be peace and harmony in all hearts. The subject today is a very intriguing subject, that is, how are we reborn? Now, at the very outset, I want to make it clear that I'm not attempting to give a description of this phenomenon called rebirth on the basis of case studies or maybe the reported incidents of small children showing some strange memories from some remote life cycles. Rather, this is a description of this phenomenon based on some of our important scriptures, Hinduism and Vedanta. So that's the first statement I want to make. Secondly, the very idea of rebirth, the same soul taking births again and again, is a peculiar concept that's mostly found in certain religious traditions of Indian subcontinent, mostly Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, Jainism, and so on. There are scholars who will argue that the doctrine of karma and rebirth were very much a part of the early Christian tradition and also part of the pre-Christian Greek mystery religions and some of the pagan religious traditions of Europe before they embraced Christianity. There are scholars who would argue that before the Council of Nicaea, rebirth and law of karma formed part of the early Christian belief systems, but there are different views, conflicting views. That's not part of our discussion, at least today. Maybe in the coming sessions, which your discussion will continue on the same topic. So we may discuss those ideas. So right now, I'm discussing the subject based on some of the important teachings in the Bhagavad Gita. Well, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter, there's a very interesting question that Arjuna is placing before his teacher. And it's a question that can occur to any of us. The question is this. Suppose we practice spiritual disciplines like prayers, meditations, reading scriptures, doing good for others, charity, and so on. And we try to live a good life. We practice all the spiritual and ethical values. And still, we may not reach the highest spiritual enlightenment in one life. What you mean by the highest spiritual enlightenment is a different question. You may call it going to the kingdom of heaven, according to Christian tradition, nirvana, according to Buddhist tradition, liberation from the life cycles, according to Hindu tradition, and also according to Buddhist tradition. Now, these are different interpretations and views, but somehow the idea that the present life is a preparation for a higher life, all that we experience today in this empirical world is a prelude to something that's going to come in future. That gives a lot of confidence, a lot of hope to many people. And in fact, surprisingly, I came across a very interesting interesting incident, and you may be, perhaps you may be surprised if I quote a literary masterpiece. I want to prove that this idea is not just a part of Hindu Vedantic tradition. See, there is an interesting incident, an episode in Dostoevsky's his masterpiece, one of his masterpieces, supposed to be the next, next only to Brothers of Karamazov, is called The Idiot. In that book, there's a character, Prince Myshkin, who is almost like a Christ-like character. A man who can be called a totality of all that can call good in the world. Humble, submissive, obedient, seeing, hearing, thinking only good and noble, an absolutely innocent person. There are criticisms among some of the literary critics that, and also some of the evangelical people who tell you that, you know, the Prince Myshkin was so weak and so effeminate, so Dostoevsky's attempt to portray somebody who is so Christ-like was not well justified from a theological point of view. That's an entirely different subject for discussion. Coming to the subject, in that book, Prince Myshkin narrates something that happened to him, a very profound part of apparently, at least according to many literary critics, including the late Archbishop of Canterbury, you know, his name is Rowan Williams, the greatest novelist the world has ever seen, in Western literary tradition, at least, Fyodor Dostoevsky, and his masterpiece, Idiot. Now, this Myshkin narrates a funny incident and a very profound, psychologically and spiritually and ethically, very, very touching incident. He says, once he met a man who was sentenced to death. Of course, this is actually a page from Dostoevsky's own life. That's an interesting thing. He himself had to go through this experience. That you can read his life. He was a nihilist and a radical ideologue who revolted against the Tsarist. It's the mid-19th century. Anyway, coming back to the novel, Myshkin narrates this incident. A prisoner who was sentenced to death. And there were about 10-15 people in front of him, one after another, they were being led before a firing squad. And he found that one after another, they were disappearing. Finally, he was thinking, I have just about 10 minutes to go before this life comes to an end. How do I spend these few minutes? He's thinking. Then he thinks, the memory comes to his mind. Sometime in the past, when he was a child, he has stoned a dog. He has thrown a stone at a dog. I could have been kinder. I should have led a better life. So he's thinking, if I have got just a few minutes to go, I would try to be a very good person. Very nice person. I will not tell a lie. I will not do any harm to anybody. I won't hurt an insect. I will live a pure life so that when my life is coming to an end, I will have a wonderful, beautiful memory to look back towards. So this is the thought goal. Now, the question arises, suppose we get a chance to know that we are going to have another life in future. We'll be reborn. How do we live in this world? And if we come to know that What we do now today will have a consequence on what we are going to be in future, on what we are going to be born, what kind of life we are going to have in future. What a profound ethical and spiritual impact it will have in our lives and thoughts. If you take life as a one chance, just one life, do your best, have the best of time, and then finally you can, when you are about to die, you can tell the priest, excuse me, sorry. And then all the bank balance will be cleared up, you will have a positive bank balance. If we have that idea, what a total anarchy it will be in the world. On the other hand, suppose we think, whatever we do now will have a consequence, will have some link to what we are going to suffer or enjoy in future. It will have a profound ethical and moral impact on our life. Not only that, we give a lot of hope. It's not a mechanism designed to give you hope. Many motivational speakers, whatever they do, at least for the time being, they do that. Positive psychology is also, whatever you mean by that, is also trying to give you a feeling of everything is wonderful, fine, amazing, everything is smiling. But it's a deep, deep nagging pain within your heart. You should be able to put up a good smile, everything wonderful outwardly. So this is not what we are talking about here. Here is a profound philosophy of life. The idea that life is not just one chance. It's a continuous flow. That's the language used by Edgar Cayce. I'm not endorsing all his views, but just to give just a reference to some of the ideas that were raging in America maybe some 60 years ago. So the point is, one question is put by Arjuna. Suppose I live a very good life in this world, and if I happen to commit some mistake, then does it mean that I have to suffer for the rest of my existence in some higher celestial region, or does it mean that I'll be rewarded for what I have given, what good I have done? Lord Krishna's answer is, whatever little bit of good thing you have done in this life, it could be some kind of a spiritual practice, meditation or prayer, it may be an act of charity, you're sending $100 check to some charitable philanthropical organizations, or maybe helping some poor people around, doing some good work. Whatever little work you do in this life will be like putting money in the bank in your name, and that money you won't lose. That bank will not collapse. When you are born again, and you will be born again, you will enjoy the benefits of this investment. Investment in terms of good actions, good thoughts, good practices. You won't lose anything. And you can start a new life any day, any moment. This underlying principle at the practical level of this concept of reincarnation. So Arjuna is asking this question. Aidi sadhyo pedu yoga chalida manasaha aprapa yoga samsiddhim kam gatim krishna gacchati. This is the verse. So it is the 37th verse of the 6th chapter. Those of you are interested, you can read later. Ayadi sadhyo pedo yoga chalida manasaha aprapya yoga samsiddhim kam gatim krishna gacchati. In simple language, it means the person who is practicing meditation, prayer, going to church, attending the prayer every Sunday, going to a Buddhist temple or Hindu temple or synagogue or any place of worship, or maybe You may say, I don't believe in God. I believe in some kind of a universal spirit. Okay, no problem. I mean spirituality, not religion. Then also, if you do something good and noble, and if you are not able to attain your highest spiritual liberation in this life, you won't lose anything. You will have put a lot of money in your account, in your bank. When you are born again, you'll be born with a checkbook and a fountain pen. What it means is, it's not a tabula rasa. Totally the opposite of what John Locke taught. You'll be born with this baggage of good actions, good thoughts, good ideas. That's why in the Isavasya Upanishad, one verse is there, where a dying man is looking back, struggling to bring back to his mind some good memories, some good actions, something good that he has done in his past. Oh mind, go back and recollect and remember and focus on all the good things you have done, so that when I am born again, I will have a very wonderful chance, another chance to continue my spiritual journey. So this is the important verse, that is 37th. Now, in answer to this, Lord Krishna gives the answer. Partha naiveha namutra vinasastasya vidyade. The answer is this. Partha naiveha namutra vinasastasya vidyade. Nahi kalyana krit kaschit durgadim tadagachati. Partha naiveha namutra means naiha namutra. Look here, Arjuna. You won't have any problem either in this life or in the life yet to come. Nahi kalyana krit kaschit. A person who has done something good. Kalyana krit means kalyana, means something good, auspicious, ethically, morally, spiritually, something positive. It could be an act of charity. It may be some good words you've spoken to somebody. It may be even a noble idea, good idea. A non-violent idea, an idea that doesn't hurt anyone, that flashes across your mind. If you have that, what happens? Durgadim tata gacchati, that person will not come to any grief. Now, remember, here God has no place in this scheme. God does have a place, but when Lord Krishna is talking about this phenomenon, he says, if you have a good person, you can build your own good life and God will be helping you. Prayer, you have faith in prayer and faith in God, that will be a great instrument to accumulate this spiritual bank balance. Go to a temple or a church or any place of worship, do something, prayer. That also will generate spiritual energy. And spiritual energy is nothing but money that you put in the bank in your name. Spiritual bank. So, Arjuna was really facing a big problem. Now, in the coming verses, this idea is discussed again and again. In the 44th verse, Lord Krishna says, Purabhyasena tenaiva hriyadevi apashopi saha jignyasurabhiyogasya shabda brahmadi vartate. It's a very interesting word. Purabhyasena tena means whatever you have practiced in your previous life cycles. You will be a prisoner in the hands of your own memories, your own samskaras, your own tendencies coming from previous life. It is said that, according to Vedanta and Buddhism and Hinduism, and also Sikhism and Jainism, it is said that, suppose you are going to a church, or a temple, or a place where some prayer or some spiritual activities are going on. And you feel, oh, this is a wonderful place. You feel at home when you are in the company of the other spiritual seekers. You feel you have come to the place that you want to come back again, that you feel an affinity with. That's because sometime in the past, Maybe in this life or previous life, you have come there. That is true. If you are, some of you may be teachers. If you are teachers, you may have experienced this. Suppose in a class, you teach a mathematical or scientific formula or whatever, maybe a lesson. And you find suddenly some students show an extraordinary ability to grasp what you're teaching just the first hearing. And you find that student is able to understand it immediately, much better than other students. Then you try to make an investigation, and you find maybe his parents are teachers who are giving private tuitions in their homes, helping with homework. That could be one possible explanation. Or some students who are beginning to study music, show some extraordinary talent. The explanation may be, he's coming from a family of musicians, listened to music right from his early days. Maybe scientist or doctor or some scientific specialist can explain it comes through genes or whatever it is. But there are many cases where children show some extraordinary superhuman talent. Not ordinary, brilliance or ability to grasp quickly, but some what you may call superhuman ability. Listen, say Ramanujam was an example. Ramanujam's parents, they were not mathematicians. There are many such examples, of course, where you find certain skills and abilities, certain manifestations of proficiency that are so mind-boggling, going beyond, which defy all possible explanations and descriptions or scientific analysis. Then, if you apply the same logic, it should be coming from another source. And that source is not the training given by parents or the circumstances under which children are brought up from previous life cycles. So if you feel when you go to a holy place or places that people normally consider to be holy, like a church or a temple, a prayer hall, a prayer session, any synagogue, a Buddhist temple, whatever may be the place that you may identify with, some place that you consider holy, where good spiritual ideas are being transmitted, discussed, or maybe vibrations through meditation, prayer. And you feel like coming back again, and your parents and grandparents never gone there, even once in their life. You also have never heard of it. It means you have gone to such places, maybe 1,000 years ago, maybe some 20 life cycles earlier, 15 life cycles earlier. You have deposited some samskaras, tendencies, in your mental system. And when you went there, it connected. And you feel this strange affinity. We may not explain it. We may not even identify it. But Lord Krishna says, Purvabhyasena tainaiva hridayasi avashopisaka jijnasirapi yogasya shabda mahadivartaya. What it means is, it because of previous life cycles, experiences, previous practices. When you had done a lot of good things in the past, you become helpless. You become a prisoner in the hands of your own good samskaras, your own good tendencies, your own good, samskara is a word now frequently used in modern books on psychology. It means samskara is much more profound a term than, let's say, tendency. Some kind of an impulse that you strongly identify with, but you cannot explain. Very strong. You are in the hands of those impulses. You can't but go back to the same prayer session. You can't but continue that practice of meditation, prayer, whatever it is. On the other hand, If you go anyway, even if you go there once and you feel, oh, this, I don't feel at home, it means your bank balance is empty in that particular field of activity. It means you have a lot of other areas of proficiency and expertise, but not in spiritual practice. That's why you don't feel at home. There's an interesting incident in Sri Ramakrishna's gospel, which is narrates very, very, very interesting incident, which actually is closely connected, relevant in this context. You know, Sri Ramakrishna used to teach sitting in his small room in Dakshineswar temple. For those of you who are not familiar with Sri Ramakrishna's life, he was a great Indian saint and sage, considered to be a great spiritual teacher, who was the teacher of, the greatest champion of Vedanta in modern times, Vivekananda. So Sri Ramakrishna was a teacher of Vivekananda. And Vivekananda himself considered to be just a humble student of Sri Ramakrishna. So Sri Ramakrishna used to live in a small little temple. He was not a learned professor, but he had certainly understood all about scriptures and Veda, mostly by listening. So many people used to go to him, agnostics, atheists, scholars, scientists, and also simple, humble villagers and conservative, traditional people whom we call religious people. They used to go and listen to him. So once a group of youngsters came to him and he was talking about God and spirituality to this group of young spiritual aspirants. And then he found some of them were listening very closely with great attention. And then he found some other youngsters sitting behind, they were feeling restless. They wanted to go back. Oh, it's boring, I don't want to listen. But some others sitting on the front row were listening to Sri Ramakrishna attentively. And Sri Ramakrishna was talking about some spiritual topics, some scriptural ideas. Then Sri Ramakrishna told these youngsters who were feeling restless, who didn't really want to remain in the room, they felt a bit boring, this discussion of spirituality. Sri Ramakrishna said, look here, why don't you go out and see the garden? Wonderful, there's a wonderful garden behind the temple. Flowers, there is river. Why don't you have a look at those wonderful trees and flowers and garden and all that? And they were very happy to get out of the room. But the other youngsters who were listening attentively, they remained in their room. It's an interesting thing. How does it happen? Because if you have really deposited some money in the bank, then that money really belongs to you. Like that, when you have already done something in the past, some higher spiritual tendencies you already generated in your mental system, you are born with it. So avashopisaka means you are helpless. If you have done a lot of good things in the past, you can't help, you cannot help continuing renewing that connection again and again. That's the idea behind. Unfortunately, the opposite also is true. If you have done a lot of negative karmas, then also those tendencies may manifest in circumstances which may prompt the manifestation of negative tendencies and impressions. Now, this is again, another question arises here. How does it really work? The Gita has got an interesting verse in this context. It says, how does it really work in real life? There's an interesting verse, those of you remember. Tatratam buddhisam yogam labhade pauradekikam yatadeja tato bhuyasam siddho kurunandana. Those who are interested, you can look at the 43rd verse of the 6th chapter. Tatratam buddhisam yogam labhade pauradekikam. What it means is, suppose buddhi means mind, mental system. Mental system means the entire memory system, emotions, feelings, impressions, tendencies, how we act and behave. We know we don't really behave and act and think and speak according to the dictations of our intellect. we will be dictated by our own mind, which means by our emotions and feelings and habits and tendencies that we have already accumulated in the mental system. When you talk to some person, when you respond to a situation, you don't refer to a book on philosophy. You spontaneously, naturally respond to the situations or circumstances that you are under. So, it is the mind, the emotions, the feelings, the accumulated tendencies, the impressions that come from our own present life situations and also past life circumstances and experiences that dictate our life, that define the way we react. So Lord Krishna says, when we are born again, there is a connection that is happening. Buddhism yoga means your mind, suppose in our mind, a lot of good samskaras. Out of good samskaras, wonderful samskaras. With that, we go to a place, or talk to a person, or read a book, or find ourselves in a certain circumstances, which prompt the manifestation of some good samskaras in the mind. What happens? Our mind and these circumstances, they connect with each other. Because they belong to the same frequency, the same wavelength. So they find themselves connecting with each other. This is what really happens. If there is any disconnect, then they will not connect with each other. If there is complete identity and similarity, then only they connect with each other. That's why it is very important for modern educationists to introduce students, young students, growing students, and also young generation to some higher ideas, higher spiritual ideas. Because if you can deposit in the minds of youngsters who come to schools and colleges some good samskaras, good tendencies, ideas of renunciation. Renunciation doesn't mean going away from your duty and running into forest, not at all. The idea, I mean the ability to say no to wrong tendencies, the ability to say no to illicit drugs and gambling and alcoholism and so on. If you can introduce to youngsters the teachings and also the lives of great men and women of all traditions, not necessarily great spiritual teachers, that's very important, because the great spiritual teachers are classical examples who embodied these values, but also great men who lived in this world, who did good things, great things for others and also for themselves. What happens, you know, you're actually helping them to put some good money in their spiritual bank. And when they grow up, these memories will influence their actions and thoughts and emotions and feelings. That is purabhyasenatayanaiva. Remember, according to Vedantic tradition, this memory system is divided into three categories. One category is the totality of all our previous life cycles, tendencies and impressions. So the human personality, at least behind the physical personality, behind the physical dimension, there is a psycho-spiritual dimension. And that psycho-spiritual dimension has got the huge memory system. It is divided into three categories, according to Vedanta and also according to Buddhism. One is Sanjita Karma, means total accumulated karmas and samskaras. Second one is, out of this totality of tendencies and impressions that are accumulated in the mental system, one fraction begins to manifest and will cause the present embodiment. In other words, where we are born, what we do now, and how we act, how we speak, how we think, all depends upon the quality or the opposite of that samskaras which are responsible for the present embodiment, the present life. But there are other tendencies and impressions which have not started manifesting. Let's think of an archer. He's trying to shoot an arrow. The arrow that is already left the bow, it corresponds to the samskaras and tendencies responsible for the present life. But the arrows that still remain in his quiver, that not yet left his bow, they represent the samskaras which have not yet started manifesting. And the samskaras which are yet to come through our actions in this life, called agamika. So, sanjita, prarabdha, agamika. So, if you have got any more explanations required, you are most welcome to discuss this and to ask questions during the interaction just after the lecture in Vivekananda Hall. So, what it means is, if we can do good things, if we can deposit in the young minds, let us say, or in any education system, some good samskaras, actually will be a huge investment we are making towards creation of an ideal nation or ideal society. Frequently, we don't remember that. Because through our own actions, our own thoughts, we can also generate fresh new samskaras which may transform our personality, which can transform our life. Samskaras are not just, remember, samskaras do not constitute any kind of fatalism or blind fatalism, not at all. It's the opposite of it. The idea of the law of karma, the idea of rebirth, is the opposite of fatalism. We are not helpless instruments in the hands of some samskaras that we may be born with. Rather, it implies we can generate new samskaras, fresh samskaras, through good actions, through good words, through good thoughts, some good practices. And education systems, or maybe the state or country, should perhaps try to help the young community to generate this samskaras. In the Gita, there is an interesting classification of people who are born like this. One group, one category, belongs to those who have done a lot of good things, but they are not highly enlightened people like Buddha or like that. They are just good people who have done a lot of good things. Suppose a person, an individual, he has strong ambitions, desires to accomplish, but he has also done a lot of good things in this life, hard work, discipline, punctuality, being good to others, obeying the law, following the principles of normal civic responsibilities, but also he wants to make a lot of money and reach big. Okay. Vedanta tells you that he may feel that he has yet to accumulate more money, more wealth, more success. And if he dies without accomplishing, without reaching 100% satisfaction, he will be born again in a family where he will be able to continue his aspirations. Suppose you want to become a billionaire, and you could only become a millionaire in this life. But you have led a good life, prayer, everything. But you are not a man of, not necessarily a man of renunciation or anything. You have a lot of desire, natural. For all people, you have a desire, big home, lot of money. You may have a lot of cars, but you want a number of, let's say, private jets and yards, so to speak. That's a higher goal, billionaire. What happens? But you have led a good life. Pure life, you have not done any harm to anybody, but this strong aspiration still remain the mental system. And you die before you reach your goal. What happens? Vedanta tells you, you'll be born in a family where
you can continue your aspirations, your efforts to have more wealth, more success. That's why certain people, they accumulate a lot of wealth. At some time, they feel, well, this is enough. I want to look for something higher. The ideal, a little spark of renunciation, detachment. Then they start a big trust or foundation, and then they want to spend some, maybe a part of their income, their accumulated wealth, to start a foundation, a trust for doing good work, charitable work in some parts of the world. Because that helps them to sleep better. Otherwise, they won't be able to sleep. In fact, that's the reason for it. So Gita says,
Athava yogina meva kule bhavati dhimaham dhimadam edat ki durlabhadaram loki jarmai dhidrisham. So prape punyakritam logan ushitta shashwati samaha suchinam simadam gehi yoga prashtha vijayate.
So these are two categories of people. I will explain. One is this. Those who are living good life, those who have done a lot of good things, but still very, very ambitious, lot of desire to enjoy, still more and more, you know, want to become billionaires, they're not satisfied being millionaires. So what happens? Because they are good people. They are born in families where their parents or their circumstances will permit them to go further, advance further, and achieve higher material things. Finally, they reach a point where they can say, no, this is enough. That's a higher evolution. When you reach a point where you can say enough, like a Buddha, born in a palace, a king, one day he left everything and wanted to become, and you know what happened? He became a Buddha. He walked 1200 miles, reached Bodhigaya, sat under the tree with a strong resolve, that his strong determination is narrated by Ashwaghosha, the great biographer of Buddha, in a 2nd century AD work. You know, he says, you know, I won't get up from this seat before I reach the highest spiritual liberation. So the point is, that state is higher stage. That is mentioned in the next verse. That is, athava yogina meva kule bhavati dhimata. There are those who reach wealth, but also the ability to say no to wealth. They are born again in another family where they can practice austerity, meditation, spiritual practice, and total detachment from worldly desires. So you can see this happening in the life. So the idea that life is not just one chance, life is a continuous wheel, rotating wheel, and any good action you do in this life or good spiritual practice that you do in this life will not be in vain. If you can meditate for half an hour once in life, if you can do something good once in life, if you can go to a library, read a good book, and sincerely develop a strong desire to practice some higher spiritual value, that resolve itself would be like a huge bank balance. You put a huge amount of money, you're putting your own spiritual bank. We are born again. These good actions, these good thoughts will accompany you. You will not be alone. And later when you are born again, you go to a place where some spiritual topics are being discussed. Some higher ideas being discussed. You feel a strange affinity, a strange connection with the place, and also with the people who discuss these ideas. This strange phenomenon of great tendencies, good tendencies, spiritual tendencies constantly accompanying you, coming to your rescue in certain difficult circumstances. That's an explanation. That's a real proof that you are not born with tabula rasa. Otherwise, there are many people. You can see the transformations that happen to innumerable people. It may be St. Augustine, of course, St. Francis, of course, associated with St. Francis. Many, many. After all, you know, when you face a problem, you need not necessarily start a new chapter in your life. Many people don't do. They go and take drugs and drinks and alcohol and gambling. They do that. They want to forget themselves. They want to run away from their own negative tendencies and impressions. That's what people do. They want to forget. They want to flee the torture of their own mind. So what they do, they take to drugs and drinks and many things. But some people suddenly go to San Francisco Public Library, take a book, maybe Bible, Bhagavad Gita, Saint Avesta, or maybe Dhammapada, maybe or Jewish, Christian, Hindu, Vedantic, Buddhist, any tradition. And suddenly when they read something, they feel a strange connection, the beginning of a new life in their life. Some other people, they want to run away from the tortures of their own mind. They want to forget themselves, with the result that their problems returned with much more torturing, with greater torture, greater tormentation. So this is what happens. So the idea that life is not just one chance. Whatever you do in one life, good, some good things, will not be wasted. It will be your treasure, your heritage, your spiritual inheritance that you are born with. Which means you are never too late and nothing will be wasted. Nothing will go in vain. This is a great idea that has come from this concept of the idea of rebirth and reincarnation, which will continue this discussion in the coming sessions. Sometime, you know, this is a continuing session. So thank you. And of course, you may remember, after this, we will have an interaction, Q&A in Vivekananda Hall. Many of these ideas may be new to at least some of you. You are most welcome to ask for clarifications. We'd be only too happy to respond to the questions. So thank you. Namaskar. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.